We live?
Yep.
Good. All right, so thank you for joining us. Everyone who's here with us at Fletcher Park and everyone who's joining us online here at the starter in a couple of minutes. If you haven't already gotten your ice cream and you're here with us, then please go get some ice cream just behind the tree. We got some Ben and Jerry's here. If you're watching online, you can come and get some Ben and Jerry's here. Otherwise, just stay with us for a moment, and please feel free to share this live stream. We're going to get started in just a second. Okay, everyone, so we're going to go ahead and get started. If you please take your seats. Thank you. My community can be a part of what we're doing here. Welcome to the new and unsettling force, Building Community. We are here with the Poor People's Campaign and a group of young people who have organized this town hall for the past couple of months. We have been hosting online town halls through the Poor People's Campaign Facebook page. The young people that I'm going to introduce you to have been talking in depth and raising consciousness around the reality of poverty as it relates to ecological devastation, the war economy, racism, and today we're going to go in depth about poverty and how it impacts different kinds of communities. So, without further ado, come on up.
I'm going to ask my friends who have been organizing with me the last 12 weeks to come up with them.
Okay, so I'll introduce them in the order that they're walking. We got Rebecca Barber.
Yay!
We got Anita Sinha. Okay, and we've got Sunny Osmond.
Yeah!
And we've got Zaina Beloch. And we got Tyler Swanson.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so is this all who's present here with us? Okay. We got Ethan Blumenthal. And Matt Murky. Okay. And we're just going to go ahead and ask everyone who's watching online and everyone who's here with us to please use the hashtag a new unsettling force. And any pictures that you take or when you share this, please use the hashtag a new unsettling force so that people can follow this and so that we can also share your posts through the Poor People's Campaign. Introduce you to have been talking in depth and raising consciousness around the reality of poverty as it relates to ecological devastation, the war economy, racism, and today we're going to go in depth about poverty and how it impacts different kinds of communities. So, oh, well, I guess we'll go ahead and do the selfie. We're going to do a group selfie. Look, we're going to do a group selfie. It's going to be, then why don't you go ahead and take a selfie with us too?
Y'all got your phones? People have their phones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They got your phones and let's do a selfie.
Y'all ready? All right. One, two, three. Okay, so again, if you're just joining us, please use the hashtag A New Unsettling Force, and also make sure that you are following the Poor People's Campaign page. So next up, we're going to have Valerie Arevalo. Valerie is a singer.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Valerie Arevalo. I'm a Raleigh native, very proudly. And I'm here to sing a song by a Argentine singer, Mercedes Sosa, which aimed all of her efforts towards social justice and revolutionary music, which is very tied to the movement. And now I'm here with my good friend, Eduardo, who is part of a local music group called Flor de Canto. So thank you very much for that opportunity.
We don't have another microphone for her. Voice is enough, though. You don't need to try.
Tengo tantos hermanos que no los puedo contar. En el valle de la montaña, en la pampa y en el mar. Cada cual con sus trabajos, con la esperanza delante, con recuerdos detrás. Yo tengo tantos hermanos que no les puedo contar. Gente de mano caliente, por esto de la amistad, con un lloro para llorarlo, con un rezo para rezar, con un horizonte abierto que siempre está más allá, y esa fuerza para buscarlo cuando está cerca es cuando se aleja más. Yo tengo tantos hermanos que no los puedo contar. Si seguimos andando curtidos de soledad, nos perdemos por el mundo y nos reconocemos por el lejano mirar, por las coplas que mordemos, semillas de inmensidad. Yo tengo tantos hermanos que no los puedo contar, y así seguimos andando curtidos de soledad, y en nosotros nuestros muertos para que nadie quede atrás. Yo tengo tantos hermanos que no los puedo con llama libertad. I have have so many brothers that I cannot count them all. In the valley, in the mountains, in the sea. Each one with their jobs, with their dreams, with their hope ahead, with their memories left behind. I have so many brothers that I cannot count them all. People with warmth in their hands, with friendship to give, with a cry to cry, with a prayer to pray, with an open horizon that's always far and beyond, with the strength to search for it, and the will. This is how we keep on. Weathered by loneliness, we get lost in this world, but we find each other again. And this is how we know each other, by the depth in our eyes, through the songs that we sing, which are seeds of eternity, and within us, those that have passed on, our loved ones. I have so many brothers that I cannot count them all, but I have one beautiful sister, and her name is Freedom. Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie Arevalo. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so if I can get everyone online and here with us to please take out your phones really quick. Take out your phones and get ready to text this number. We're going to text 90975. Again, that's 90975. We're going to text the word ACTION, all caps, ACTION. 90975, the word ACTION, all caps. All right, so when you text this number, then you'll be kept up to date on what this group is doing. I'll continue after this town hall. So, next up, we're going to have, where's Yolanda? Yolanda, will you come here? So, Yolanda Peterson is going to share some experiences with us, and I think it's a good way for us to begin talking about the reality of poverty.
Hello, everyone. So, yeah, I grew up in poverty and lived in, I live in poverty my whole life. There has never been a time in my life where I have, haven't had to think about where my next meal is coming from or my housing, financial crises were going on in my family. I saw the changes. I saw the notes on the door. I saw the sheriff, you know. I saw my parents and grandparents working extra hard and because not being able to spend time with them. So I knew something was wrong. And as a child, that really does affect you. Let's see. There was one particular time that I remember that kind of stuck out with me. Somebody came to our house because we couldn't pay them their money back. So they took our stuff. And that was right before we got evicted. I've been evicted more times than I care to admit publicly. I've been home, look for food, sleep in places, and take care of my personal hygiene needs in other public restrooms or gas stations. I've dealt with our poverty on a systemic level because the truth is I did everything I was supposed to do. I went to school. I worked hard. I got good grades. And still, I am afflicted by poverty. It never went away. Only thing it did was add more because I have loads of student loan debt now that I have to pay back. And that's something that worries me as well, because I can never be afford to pay this stuff back. During homelessness, I've suffered from just... The Poor People's Campaign is important because it lets people, like, it puts a face on it. You see me. You know, we could talk all day about poverty issues and what's going on in the world, but you don't get to see me. You see me. And you get to hear our stories and see how pervasive this is. It's everybody. You know, having to think about, okay, well, what are my children going to eat now? You know, and the way our system is built up, it's designed to keep us that way. So, yeah, I could go find a good job that's going to pay me six figures a year. But at the end of the day, it doesn't do anything when my brother, or like our senior said, our brothers don't have that freedom.
Thank you, Yolanda. I just want to... Let's lift that up. Thank you, and we do love you. I think it's unsettling sometimes to hear people who are bold enough to speak about their experience. And it is relatively new to hear people speaking about their experience, but poverty is not new. And the only way that we're going to change it is if we continue to raise this conversation and insert the reality of poverty into people's minds. And give people the boldness to speak about it so that we can change it. So, is that, I think that's Reverend Barber in the back. Is that Reverend Barber? Here. One of the leaders of the Poor People's Campaign and the National Call for Moral Revival. Okay, so we're going to have another person come up and speak with us about a different aspect of poverty. Is Lily here? Lily Levin? Hi, Lily. Good to meet you. Did I say your last name right? Levin.
So I'm just going to speak about, like, the engagement that I've done in my community, like, I guess Youth Central. So, inconvenient truth, and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And our world is dying, and I was pretty passionate about that. And when I got older, I kind of faded away from that, because when I got into middle school, I became a little more self-conscious, and I didn't want to stand up for the issues that I believed in. And then last year, between my sophomore and junior year of high school, I went to the ACLU Summer Advocacy Institute, and I heard stories from people who had been disenfranchised by the system, and I knew that I had to do something and that I had to speak up. So I started my group called Triangle People Power, and we're basically this activist organization based on the ACLU's grassroots agenda. And we focus on issues that the ACLU and its rights. And so we advocated in front of the Raleigh City Council for immigration rights and for them to pass the Freedom Cities Model Policy 7, 8, and 9. Unfortunately, North Carolina has this law where you can't have sanctuary cities, so that was overturned, but we were advocating for an issue that we believed in. And we also registered a bunch of voters. And now, after attending this service with Reverend Barber and Al Gore, we're on to our new initiative, and that's advocating against the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. And we're working with students across the state and counties directly affected by the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. And the goal is not to exploit these voices, right? We want to put them at the forefront of the movement, because we want to put a face to the name going through the backyard of people who live maybe like 100 miles, 200 miles away from me, but have drastically different lives. And so we're going to connect with students across North Carolina. We're hoping to like have transportation and come in and have like a rally day with the governor and a lobby day, and then rally at the General Assembly for the North Carolina Clean Air Act 2025 and against Gen X. So yeah, we just started on that project, and I began with the Poor People's Campaign when I got asked to speak, and I spoke in Raleigh, and that was, like, the first time I learned about the Poor People's Campaign, but it's super cool, and it's amazing that people who are directly disenfranchised by the system are put at the front lines, right? Like, I'm here to amplify these voices. I'm not here to, like, speak out for issues that other people have experienced, and I just think it's so amazing to advocate against the system that is so directly disenfranchising them and marginalizing them for so many years. And we are a new and unsettling force, and I just want to give it up to everyone who organized this.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so again, if you're joining us online, please use the hashtag a new unsettling force. Again, that's hashtag a new unsettling force. So I think we're going to make a minor change. And we're going to ask Reverend Barber. We're going to ask Reverend Barber to come up and share a little bit with us about, yes, sir.
Yolanda telling the truth.
Yeah.
But I come from a tradition where it says the truth will set you free.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm coming. No. Coming over here. This takes me longer than you. You're young.
That's okay. That's okay. There's urgency, but there's patience.
That's right. Hello, everybody. Let's give it up for this Speak Out today that's happening, being shown all around the country. And let's give it up for these millennials that are doing their own thing, their own way, but with us. As I once said to somebody, if you're black and you're poor and can't pay your light bill, you're white and you're poor and can't pay your light bill, you're Latino and poor and can't pay your light bill, you're Asian and poor and can't pay your light bill, your First Nation and poor and can't pay your light bill. If it's dark, we're all black in the dark, so we need to stick together in the light. And the same is true in any other, that in terms of health care. If you're old and don't have health care, if you're young and don't have health care, it doesn't matter. If you walk into a hospital and they won't take care of you, then the sickness will have more power over you than the cure could have. And so it's so powerful that these young folk do anything. This is really, you're going to say, what does this have to do with the Poor People's Campaign? And part of what it has to do is we take care of one another, right? So turn, just look that way. Look that way, right? And follow me. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you, Andrea. Happy birthday, Miss Andrea. Happy birthday to you. Now, she's always behind the camera. But if the cameras weren't working, people wouldn't see what we're doing, right? And so that's Andre and Eric Preston, and they're always together. We thank God for them.
Can I keep the camera on her?
No. Three things. This movement clearly understands that the truth that we must tell now, and the first goal of this movement is to get the truth in the mainstream, to get the truth in the narrative. You can talk about all the things you want to do, but if the narrative doesn't shift, and if the truth is not told, you can't make the larger changes. And sometimes movement people forget that. We have a lot of work to do, and we're doing it to break through the national narrative and the national consciousness. One truth is what the ecological devastation, the war economy, and the false moral narrative of religious nationalism. We are not talking about Trump. I knew I wasn't going to get a hand on that, because so many people, even us, can fall prey to the narrative. If we just had Trump out of the way, that everything would be fine, And if Democrats were in office, everything would be fine. Now, I'm not politically naive. I knew it would be better with certain people in office. But we must deal with this fact that for the last 50 years, ever since the Poor People's Campaign was assassinated, didn't just end now. You hear what I'm saying, young folk? It was assassinated. Every movement that has tried to face the brunt of repression against the structure, from the structure. Dr. King in 65 talked about how when right out of slavery, when black and white, when slave, newly formed, newly freed slaves began to connect with poor whites in the South, he said that a group of oligarchs, the bourbon class, he called it that time, sold, when poor white stomachs growled, they fed them the stale bread of racism. Because that class was afraid of what black and white people building coalitions, particularly that would address. And when Dr. King added militarism to the critique of racism and poverty, even black organizations walked away from it. Unions walked away from it. But more importantly, there was an intentionality about making sure that that would not happen, because the salvation of this nation lies in the unity of black and white and Latino and Asian and First Nation poor people coming together in a fusion way to address and demand that they be addressed, that it be addressed, systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, the war economy, and the false moral. And the truth is, no party really wants to address it. The truth is that as we look at this reality for 50 years, there's been almost an attempt to not even say the word poor. In fact, not an attempt, it actually happened. We said when we started this, we had 26 debates in 2016 alone. We don't have to go back to 2012, 2008, no, just in 2016, 26 debates, presidential debates, in the primary and in the general election. And not one of those debates focused on poverty. Not one of those debates focused on racism. And focusing on racism is, be careful, white supremacists at Charlottesville. Or even Silent Sam. That's not focusing on racism. Those are symbols of racism. But if you're going to focus, it's like, for instance, Charlottesville, almost every politician that has any sense will say they were against what happened in Charlottesville. But then those same politicians will go and vote for the policies of white nationalism. You know what the policies of white nationalism are? Voter suppression. Right. Yeah. Denial of health care to everybody. Right. Denial of living wage. Right. Immigrant injustice. Yep. You hear what I'm saying? And so systemic racism is more than just, did somebody call you the N-word? I have come to a point, and this is going to sound strange in this audience, I don't dismiss it, I'm not saying it's little, but I have come to a point that I really am not that afraid of somebody who called me the N-word. I'm more afraid they are voting policies that create disparate treatment, and they do it nicely. They do it genteel. They do it with Robert's Rules of Order. And they call it economic. The tax cut bill that was passed by this Congress was one of the most racist bills we've ever. But nobody talked about it being racist because nobody took the time to say, if we cut $2 trillion or whatever it was that they cut from the federal budget, how is that going to hurt black people? How is it going to hurt Latinos? How is it going to hurt poor whites? The recent military budget that we passed is a racist bill. If you look at the empty analysis that this movement is bringing, and it's not easy. It's going to require us to be steadfast, unmovable, and always abounding in the work, in this work. Because right now, people are fascinated and with Trumpism, and the problem is many of them are not looking at how you even get a Trump. And in order to understand that, the greatest challenge right now to America is not the hacking of Russia, but voter suppression that has hacked our voting system for years and racial gerrymandering. That doesn't just affect black people, but gerrymandering, for instance, disables the ability for black and white and brown people to form coalition to elect candidates of their choice. And we must be a movement that will not deal with the inconvenient truth. And dare to be a movement that will not just sound like everybody else sound. We got to tell that truth. And how to stay on it. Because we are at a point that the question really now is, can America even be America? That's really the question. Because if after nearly over 200 years of existence, you're still wrestling with the question of equal protection under the law. If after 200 years of existence, you still have people stealing elections and stealing Supreme Court justice seats. If after 200 years of it, over 200 years of domestic tranquility and establish justice and provide for the common defense and promote the general welfare of all people, if you're still wrestling with that and you're almost 300 years old and you're willing to select a candidate that would sit at the top, but more importantly, would sit at the top with enablers at the bottom. Yep. The question really is, can America be America? And the reason we have joined the fight is because, like Langston Hughes, we say, America may never have been America to us, but we swear this oath that America will be. We are not willing to give up on the possibility of this nation. And Asian, brown and yellow and red, gay and straight, from the mountains to the seas, from the urban areas to the rural areas, just yesterday in 26 states, we're coming together with a deep analysis. And we're going to work to first shift this narrative. And it's already happening. Do you hear how many politicians now starting to talk about moral? You know, you all kind of did that. You know, you did that. That there are more stories now about the issue of poverty that are beginning to break through on the internet and in blogs and in newspapers than have. Because a movement, an uprising, a moral uprising. And so that's the first truth. We got to be clear. I make no mistake. Oh, we're not that naive. We're going to be involved. We have sense enough to know how to vote. And we're not in that crowd where everybody's the same. No. But the difference is we're going to vote for you and then hold you accountable too. The difference is we're going to put forth an agenda and demand that that agenda be rendered to the people. Not just 218, 220, but and beyond. That's why it's so good to see that we don't see young people as the leaders of tomorrow. They are right here with us today. We are grinding this thing out together today. Number two, the last thing. The truth is, and it's not only about one person, Donald Trump. The second truth is that so often are not told because the not telling of them lessens the urgency. Lessens the urgency, right? So it's almost deliberate. And so, for instance, right, we're starting to make the case, and the media is starting to pick it up, that there's not 39 million poor people in America. There's 140 million poor people in America. We have to tell the truth that's not told, because the real truth will put an urgency upon all the people of this nation. The truth is, the majority of poor folk are not looking. We have to tell that truth. But the truth also is that the largest percentage of people of their, of one race who are poor are black. Over 66% of all African Americans are poor or low wealth. Nearly 100 years post-slavery. The truth is, we have 14 million poor children in this nation. 14 million poor. How dare us as a nation question other countries when in our, in the richest nation in the world, we are the only one of the 25 wealthiest nations that does not offer health care to all of its citizens. How dare we have an arrogance as a nation and think that just because we have a military capable of blowing the world up 50 times that makes us first or a first nation. When in fact the faith traditions I come from says that the ultimate judgment of a nation's character is how you treat your children, how you treat the sick, how you treat the stranger, and how you treat the least of thee. And we must tell that truth, that not as Democrats, not as Republicans, but as moral agents, until it creates an urgency. And we must tell it with a face on the facts so that it can't be ignored. Right here in North Carolina, politicians will tell you there are 1.9 million poor people in North Carolina. No, there are 4.3 million poor people in North Carolina. There are almost 1.2 million of them are children in North Carolina. 2.5 million of them are poor people in North Carolina are white. 2.4 million are black in North Carolina. In North Carolina, where health care was denied, one of the reasons I believe the Democrats could not beat back the Republicans because they would not tell the truth either. And they would not show this state who was really being hurt by the denial of health care. There are over a million, 30,000, 40,000 of them are veterans. The majority of the people in this state that are without health insurance are white. Many of the people who are without health insurance live in the district of the people that voted to keep health insurance out of this, Medicaid expansion out of this state. We must put these truths in facts and faces, and we cannot do it for a little while, and we cannot be discouraged. Right? We have to have a long-term vision. 1954, the Brown versus Board of Decision, Rights Act. 1954, the Brown decision. But it wasn't until 1965, the Voting Rights Act. 1954, the Brown decision, but it wasn't until 1969 that I went to an integrated school. We must have a marathon approach to what we're doing. And that's why we need you all, because somebody has to keep passing the baton. I told somebody as I closed the other day, I don't know what all my role is, or some of our, it might be our role, some of us, to sow the seed that's going to grow up and be the transformation. It might be some of our role to hang around. I know it is. I wouldn't want to be doing anything with my life now other than working with all of you across this world and across this country to fight to save the soul and the heart of this nation. Thank you. I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. And lastly, we must tell this truth. And come get this mic, because you know me. Let's tell this truth. Somebody the other day said, we have a lot of things to do, but poor people's campaign knows that changing things sometimes will just mean helping a neighbor. And I told him, I said, no, don't say that. Because, see, that then, some people will default, or I handed somebody a sandwich. That's not the Poor People's Campaign. Julian Bond said it like this. There is a necessity for movements that will stand by the river. And when they see babies floating by in the river, will run out, swim out, grab babies one at a time and bring them to the shore. That's an important role. That's social work. And it is important. But there must be another thing. And that is those who stand on that shore and see those babies floating by, and they dodge the system that's throwing them in. The Poor People's Campaign has as its task the goal of changing the system that are throwing people away and throwing them in. And if we all stick together, we will be able to make change in this nation and this world. I have no doubt about it, because if we didn't have that possibility, they wouldn't have fought it so hard in the past. And one of the reasons that we're all together now, and we have tri-chairs and co-chairs and all this stuff, because they can't kill us all if we stick together. That's the whole point. Thank you so much. Folk together, not one.
Let me thank Reverend Barber one more time for coming out for us. Okay, so I just want to get us back on our program. I want to again introduce myself. If you're just joining us, I'm Kenneth Alexander Campbell, and I'm here. I'm your host for A New Unsettling Force, building community out here at Fletcher Park. For the past year, I've been documenting the work of young people in Raleigh, in Durham, in Chapel Hill, here in North Carolina. So if I can get Rebecca, William, Anita, Sonny, Tyler, and Zainab to come up here and join me. Okay, so I'm going to ask you all to each start to share a little bit about the what you've learned over the past year since you've gotten involved with the Poor People's Campaign. And then we're going to start with Rebecca and Sonny.
Wait, what? Oh, these are statistics. Okay. Hey, y'all. How many of you all know that today is also Women's Equality?
Yes.
100 years since women have had the right to vote. Some women, of course. And what the passage of, you know, the 19th Amendment shows us, it shows us why we need to take a deeper look. Because just as all women did not gain the right to vote, all women are not experiencing equality in terms of pay. So today I wanted to talk a little bit about the pay gap for the reason, and the reason is because the most people who are poor in this country are people who work every day. But somehow they still fall in the gaps. So I just want to lift up our things as something that we can change and things that shouldn't be this way. I want y'all to make some noise. Right. Okay, so in North Carolina, more than 507,000 households are headed by women. Now listen, about 32% of those families have incomes that fall below the poverty line. Shame, that's right. Around among North Carolina women who hold full-time, year-round jobs, Black women are paid 64 cents, Latinos are paid 48 cents, and Asian women are paid 80 cents for every dollar paid to white non-Hispanic men.
That's a shame,
right? A combined total of nearly $21 billion a year due to the gender age gap. That's a shame, right? I need y'all to say it louder, because that's not right. Black women lose 18,000 annually as a result of the wage gap, and Latinas lose 25,000. You know, this is money that can be going to their children, that can be buying groceries, paying rent. You know, it's just not right. And finally, one more stat. Latina, American Indian, and African American women are more than twice as likely to live in poverty as Asian and white women. So not only is there a gap between men and women, we need to be looking at the intersections and lifting that up too. Thank you, Rebecca. I got to pull out my phone too because I'm millennial and, you know, we don't print things out anymore. Just kidding. We haven't printed out agendas. So I wanted to talk about intersecting identities again as a queer person, and like Bishop Barber said earlier, people don't like to talk about who actually is experiencing poverty. So I wanted to talk about a group experiencing poverty that our legislators and those in power don't want to talk about. LGBTQ, specifically queer youth of color, and that is an intersecting identity that no one wants to talk about. LGBTQ youth are 120% more likely to experience homelessness than their heterosexual and cisgender peers. But what really makes the difference is the intersecting oppressions. Oftentimes, studies don't even check to see if these identities are racialized, but the groups that offer support to these youth overwhelmingly report that almost 99% of the people who are receiving support are queer youth of color, specifically Black and Latino youth, and they disproportionately identify as LGBT. And so less than 10% of young people identify as queer, but over 40% of homeless youth do. Black and brown queer youth are so much more likely to experience homelessness than their white counterparts. Queer people of color are twice as likely to experience discrimination when applying for jobs and interacting with police than their white peers. And this shows especially in homelessness, where young people with intersectional identities are more vulnerable to multiple forms of extreme discrimination and homelessness. Thank you for listening to this. I just want to lift up all of the people, and like Rebecca said, people are working every single day. So thank you for coming here, and let's hold those people in our hearts.
Thank you all. All right, so again, use the hashtag A New Unsettling Force so that we can follow and share whatever post you all, if you're taking selfies or if you're tweeting about this or if you're sharing it on Facebook, the hashtag is A New Unsettling Force. And again, please share this with your friends and your network so that we can spread this message. Next up, we're going to have Zainab Baloch, if you'll talk to us about the reality of poverty in the Muslim community.
Hey guys, hello, assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, hi y'all. First off, thank you for coming here today. I want to talk about today as a Muslim woman, as a 27-year-old Muslim woman, as a millennial, as part of a generation that is the poorest in history, as part of a religion that is the poorest in this country, and I'm here today because I think I got part of this because, first off, it's just something we don't talk about. It's something we don't hear about. It's another group that we just continue to ignore. 45% of Muslim Americans live in poverty, and then 1 in 10 doctors are also Muslim. There's a huge discrepancy there, and we're not a war on terror that was actually created to really just, it's a, like every war on, to really keep down black and brown communities, and in this case, African American communities, poor African American Muslim communities. They stole faith and manipulated it and used it to elect the president that we have today. They used policies to our faith continues to be manipulated as an excuse to refuse refugees and immigrants into this country that is a country of immigrants and refugees. Our faith was exploited to, I'm going to say this again. Our faith was exploited to perpetuate a war on terror that, like every other war on in this country, can Muslims. This fear turned into systematic anti-Muslim racism has let the government spend almost $2.1 trillion on the war on terror, which if we had put that money into education, it would have created almost 38 million jobs. And maybe a few more people with morals. This war on our community essentially took money out of the hands of people that needed it, and instead it was used to generate more hate. Hate that prevents our community from living comfortably and safely. And that's in America and in this city. What I'm talking about, I am a Raleigh resident, I was born and raised here. My chances of a country because of the place I was born, which is America. And my chances of being in the poverty are even higher because of the city I live in, because your chances of moving out of poverty if you live in Raleigh are one of the worst in the country. We're worse than Oakland, Queens, New York, and D.C. And I can't say that without differentiating between race. It's not, if you're a poor black kid born in Raleigh, your chances of getting out of poverty are only 8%. And we have to recognize the racial aspect of that, because there's a very huge difference. And as a city, as someone who was born and raised here, as someone who continues to see the struggles of, you know, man, we are all pretty much always, you know, that paycheck to paycheck lifestyle, everyone knows about it, especially our generation, because we're going to be paying debt for the rest of our lives. And this group has really taught me, and we've all kind of taught each other to realize that the urgency is now. We really don't have time to wait on someone to, you know, go and change a policy or whatever. We have to do it. We can't keep, you know, looking at anyone else. Everyone here has a responsibility to do something about it. You're not even looking up to your phone or doing, but everyone has to do the work here. And it's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy. And that's what we have to accept. And we just really need to recognize that. And I'm glad that you guys all came out today. And I really hope that you guys continue to stay involved and just ask us, because we need help. We can't fight poverty without everyone else. So thank you.
Thank you, Zainab. So next up, we're going to, I just want to take a beat just to acknowledge kind of like what these three young women have just kind of laid out for us. They're really getting into the finer details and the finer interconnections of poverty. I think a lot of people shy away from it. They are bringing to all of us that we all need to take out into the world. So I also want to use this moment to ask William Barber and Tyler Swanson to kind of talk about how do you begin to understand all of these, we'll call them interconnections, and begin to actually do the bigness, to actually address the bigness of the work and do the work. Come on up together. Let's talk about it.
So,
As was already said, we just want to thank everybody for coming out today, because, you know, this is really where change starts. Is in terms of understanding this moment, in terms of understanding this movement, in terms of understanding the urgency, there are two words that really come to mind: power and possibility. And not to talk too much, but when we see the actions of a rogue General Assembly attempting to grab power, when we see the actions of a legislature attempting to limit the power of our communities, attempting to suppress our vote, when we see actions attempting to undercut and undermine our democracy, that is a question of power. On the flip side, when we see resistance to that, when we see spaces like this coming together and our communities bridging and identifying ways that we can build local power, but also redefine what power means, road power that can challenge and protect communities, that is a question of power. And it is also a question of possibility, because that which is possible is what makes these moments of us attempts to build power relevant. It's the possibility of actually seeing the issue of poverty and addressing it in our lifetimes and actually uplifting communities. It's the possibility of actually seeing and understanding the urgency of climate change and addressing it in our lifetimes, so that we make decisions now that allow for a sustainable world 7 generations out. It is the possibility of actually having more spaces like this where we are reminded of the notion of beloved community, that it can be achieved, so let's understand this moment, but also our role. I think that's one of the many questions, two of the questions that we often ask ourselves is, what, as millennials, is this moment in history that we are living in? But more importantly, what do I do with it? With that being said, that's the conversation that we're hoping to have as a group. That's what we're committing to with this movement, to exploring. And we're going to talk a little bit about next steps. But we hope you all will join in this movement and in answering that question with us here in North Carolina. Because there is possibility to change power here in our state. Thank you.
Well, you know, I always thought it was hard to follow your father. I guess I just want to say, I want to echo everything that you've just said, and know that we all have work to do. It starts with each one of us. And I think it's important that, you know, we as millennials understand that the only way we're able to do this work, because we stand on the shoulders and on the giants of those who have came before us, who have paved this way. And we stand on the shoulders of the great Al McShirley and Ella Bakers and others who have put their lives on the line for us. So, with that being said, it's time for us to go to work. Let me hear y'all say, let's go to work.
Let's go to work.
I don't think that didn't sound confident. Y'all didn't sound confident. Let's say it again. Let's go to work.
Let's go to work.
So, the first thing we have to do, and I think I can just go on and talk about what that work looks like. How many of you all are registered to vote? That's great. So, y'all got some homework to do. These great voter registration forms, it's going to go in each one of you all's hands. And you all are tasked with registering somebody else, because that's the only way that we can build power. Because, you know, we can't compete with lobbyists and with those who have immoral money. But what we can do is take our moral hands to the ballot box and select folks who agree with our agenda, and hold those folks accountable. But that's just one step. That's the first step. The second step is, once we get those folks in, we can't become complacent. Because I heard someone say yesterday in Northampton that complacent injustice, and injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Dr. King said that. So, we've got to hold those folks accountable. We can't just sit there and, you know, excuse their actions because they look like us, or they show up at our picnics, or they're packing book bags when it's time to go to school. No. We got to hold those folks accountable, because we have in North Carolina an unconstitutional, constituted legislative body, i.e. they are illegal. And so if they're making illegal laws in our name, we've got to send them home. And hopefully this will trickle down. You know, we're going to spark change. It's like you throw a pebble in the stream, it creates a little ripple effect. The fact that it's not only going to change this state, but we're going to change this nation because we have a moral obligation. We have our, it's our duty. And I don't know about y'all, but I'm fired up. I'm fired up because I, as you said, I see the possibilities. I feel the possibilities. I feel that we're on the brink of that third reconstruction. But it's going to be difficult. And this race is not given to the swift. It's given to those, I'm doing a remix, y'all. It's given to those who endure. So I know some of y'all are looking like that. I don't sound quite right. So, that's some of the work. Now, I think we're going to pass this along to let others know how you all can get it. But don't leave until you get a voter registration form.
That's right. And, you know, you can... That's okay. If you don't know Septima Clark, Google her. All right. So, I think we're going to talk about some other next steps. I do just want to say that this, what we're doing here, doesn't just happen. This is work that these young people have put in so that we can create an entry point to the other work that they've been doing for this past year and the work that has been done for the past decade and for the work that has been done for centuries to bring love and justice to this world. So I do want to say that we have been working on a film so that we can bring that work to you, and that can be another entry point for you. I'm going to ask my co-director.
That film, like we said, we understand the multifaceted nature of this work. There is work that we have to do all things well in. So in terms of next steps, there are really four next steps. We want to make sure we articulate this because this is not just a moment. This is not just one event. This is the launch of a movement in this state and the continuation of a movement in the state. So the first next step that we have committed to as a group is continuing to manifest and engage in this fusion tradition that is so near and dear to North Carolina. We have seen, and you say, that we stand on the shoulders of giants, giants in terms of leaders, giants in terms of movements. We know that we are all a product of the Four Together Tomorrow Monday movement. We are all a product of the New Poor People's Campaign, and we just want to engage in taking up that. Is that we are committing to build a movement of consciousness for which voter registration and engagement is a part, not the final solution, because we always have to go deeper. We always have to hold elected officials accountable, but also do deep diving, deep understanding of issues in the communities. Our engagement has to be multifaceted. The third thing is that each and every one of you, and you all can help us with this, is we want to identify local community issues where we can plug in directly. We saw some of that this weekend with the canvassing. We went to Northampton. We had a presence in Chapel Hill. We're here today, as well as Stokes County. There are local issues as members of movement. We need to show up as representatives. Fourth, we want to be in community and contact with you all. There is so much good work just looking at this crowd that's happening in this state. We want to see if there's a way we can collectively walk together and continue to build this movement. So we have a sign-up sheet. Many of you all signed up coming in with the ice cream. If you go out and are going to grab some more ice cream, please sign up. Make sure we can get in touch with you all. And fifth, coming back to where you started with the documentaries and the films that we've been working on, part of the multifaceted work is to create points of entry. So we're working on a film that has looked at our engagement, our exploration of this concept of fusion and continuation of movement for the last year or so, and we're coming to your communities. We want to come to leadership, but to use what we've been doing as a model that can inform and inspire others. We want to have conversations of how we sow seeds of leadership, because we have to scale this work up, y'all. As good as this moment feels, as great as it is to be in community, we are in a fight for the soul of our nation. And we will win. We will win.
I believe that we will.
We're going to do this for real.
We're going to do it right.
We're going to do this for real.
Okay, so y'all just repeat after me. We're gonna.
I believe that we.
Shakura came up with is something I'm going to ask y'all to repeat after me to say. So say, it is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and support each other.
We must love each other and support.
So I think that really kind of sums up the principles that we come into when we do this work, and yeah, we're just here. We're all about building community and supporting each other. So I want to say thank you for coming out.
So thank you all for coming out. We want to have a special thank you to Ben and Jerry's again. Thank you all for all the work that is being done and will continue to be done. And let's build this out. Tyler is also going to be passing out voter registration forms. And Zana wants to.
Okay. You guys, just real quick, take your phones, follow the campaign. If you search Poor People's Campaign, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And it's important, if you don't know how to use those social platforms, there's a couple millennials in this crowd, which you can definitely utilize them and ask them how you can use these different social medias and check them out. I think that would be great. You know, definitely intergenerational stuff, work together, because we're going to need technology. There's no way we're going to reach the masses without technology, so that's really important. And please, there's an entire audit on the poorpeoplescampaign.com. Please check out the audit. You can learn a lot more about these issues and really learn, really the depth of them. As well, I want to say thank you again to Ben and Jerry's. I really want to work with us. Thank you. And if you definitely want to learn more of that song, please feel free to talk to her. And I also, yeah, I will say I want to thank and all the volunteers, like anyone who just stepped up to help while we were preparing and just became a volunteer. Thank you. Thank you, Yolanda, for the social media and being able to take all our crazy ideas and just go with it. Thanks. That's rare. Usually when you work with groups, they don't always like our social media ideas, so I truly appreciate that. And I definitely also want to thank Lily for speaking. You spoke very powerfully, and I heard you speak a couple of months ago, and you're a very amazing, powerful speaker, and we would love to have you join our group and always be part of it. So thank you for being here as well and speaking and sharing your story. That was not something that's easy to do, and it's hard to stand up here and talk about your personal matters and be okay with everyone else knowing. So it takes a lot of courage. So can everyone thank her again for that? Okay.
Okay, we're going to thank Ferris. Well, yes, we're going to thank Ferris Bearcat and The Lighthouse for providing audiovisual feeds and films. And we're going to thank this group right here. Can we give them another round of applause? They pulled us together. And Zainab's siblings for helping set up. And Rebecca's got something to say.
We also want to thank Kenneth.
Thank you for coming. What's that they end every event with for together?
Not once again!
A little louder than you.
Oh, one more time. You said forward together?
No!
I still can't hear you. Forward together?
No!